Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. If you're off for Martin Luther King Day, you missed the opportunity to have a nice little commute to work.
I mean,
this is a great drive.
There's no lane dividers. You know, I mean, just you have no idea what lane you're in. But again, my whole point is, why do we pay tolls if no one bothers to plow? On the Jane Addams and on the Kennedy, too. I mean, we pay taxes for that. But you actually pay a toll to use a toll road.
Yeah,
nobody cares.
Yeah.
Everybody was a little hungover from the Vikings.
You also pay taxes for an Illinois Department of Transportation. But,
that's
neither here nor there.
I didn't see one snowplow.
No, I saw salt trucks, but I didn't see a lot of plowing other than what I was doing with my grill.
How many people did you knock off on the way to work?
Yeah, it's not an enjoyable commute coming up from the city.
Yeah. You can only go 40 at the most, but how fast did you go? 50, 60?
I went at appropriate speed for the safety of myself and those around me. So there was that, Martin Luther King course day, and we're going to get to some remembrances of Martin Luther King, as well as do a bit of a status check on where you think the state of race relations is as we are 3 months from the 50th anniversary of his assassination this year. We had that Vikings game yesterday, and I can tell you were excited based on the
hat
you're wearing today.
Yeah, it's a Vikings hat. I don't know. I mean, I grew up, my cousins, of course, half my family lives in Minnesota, so we've always cheered for the Bears and the Vikings and
it's been a tough,
a little bit, too.
It's been a tough year for Minnesota, season. This season they lost Al Franken. They lost Garrison Keillor. So it was nice for the Vikings to give a moment to the Minnesotans. Okay, then.
Steps into it. Pass is caught. Diggs. Sideline. Touchdown. Unbelievable. Vikings win it.
That deserves an oh my and a whoa Nelly.
Oh, and too soon, yeah, because Keith Jackson passed away. And I think we'll talk about him also because he was one of the best. But that game last night, I thought I had a heart attack. You know the rookie from the Saints who missed the tackle? He said he was going for his legs, not the body of Diggs.
Yeah.
And Diggs, thank God, afterwards. And I love when athletes are humble and appreciate a higher calling.
Since I first got here, I never stopped working. Today was when all the work paid off. And, you know, God put me in a position. And I just try to take advantage of my opportunity.
You can't hear him, but if you saw him,
theme music follow him around?
Yeah, it does, wherever he goes.
Case Keenum, of course, the Vikings quarterback, tweeted about the game-winning touchdown. Third best moment of his life.
Oh, yeah.
Number one, gave life to Jesus Christ. Number two, married his wife. Number three, lacked second game-winning touchdown, sending the Vikings to the NFC Championship game.
So excited.
I would have put, I don't want to quibble with Case Keenum. They're his moments. But I would have put passing Timmy Chang for most passing yards in NCAA history when he was at the University of Houston in the second slot.
Oh, and just bump the wife.
That's me.
Honey,
that's my perspective.
Honey, you've been moved.
Fourth. What's wrong with fourth?
Well, if you ain't first, you're last. So, I mean, she's coming in second. No, that's good that he praised God first. And now they play Philadelphia they play the Eagles at Philadelphia. But if they win that game, I mean, my God, they're going to have a Super Bowl in their hometown. That has never happened, ever. So, you know, I was in Minnesota this summer, and they are so pumped that they're having the Super Bowl there.
If only Fran Tarkenton was alive. He is alive to see
this. He's alive.
Oh, good.
It's not like Keith Jackson.
Yeah.
You remember Keith Jackson?
Yeah.
Oh, now that came from my great-grandpa. He was a farmer. He was a whistler, one of these guys. He was always working and always busy, and but he really didn't whistle. He just kind of, one of those, you know? Uh-huh. And then he would do something or drop something or whatever, and oftentimes you'd hear him say, "Whoa, Nelly, whoa, Nelly," that kind of stuff. And it's kind of stuck to the little scruffy kid following him around. And
that's how "Whoa, Nelly" came to be.
Well, Jackson had a great voice for an announcer, but he also was very colorful with the lingo.
As it is called, the Cinderella story. Well, we've had all the romance. Now let's find out if she can dance. This is The Weekend with Whiskers. And a big ugly from the pits of anonymity. Galloway, touchdown Buckeyes. Whoa, Nelly.
There it is.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Let it snow and snow.
Yeah, it's just lovely outside. It's that romantic if you're on the roadways.
It's not death-defying or anything.
You understand the irony. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You buy the false alarm in Hawaii?
Ooh.
Do you buy the official story of ballistic missiles heading for Honolulu? Hold. No, wait. False alarm.
It was during a shift change, and they were testing the system. And apparently, by the way, you have to press the button twice, not once. So they came clean. He said that, you know, the guy pressed the wrong button. Here's Vern Miyagi. Yes, I butchered his last name. Who is with emergency management saying it's my fault.
It's my responsibility, so this would be my fault. The whole purpose of this is that the change of shift briefing is for each shift to understand what is the process. We'll take action to prevent this from ever happening again by having more than one person there to do this, make this decision, or work on equipment changes.
Yeah.
We'll have two people in charge instead of one. But could you see the video? It is heartbreaking. People ran out of their cars. They abandoned their cars on the highways. And one guy took his family and went underneath a manhole cover. And other people, I mean, they called and said their last goodbyes to loved ones.
Here, Governor, do we have Hawaii Governor Ige on the topic here? I don't see
it. I have Ige. Yeah, right here. You see it right there? Yeah.
Let's hear from the governor.
Here's the gov.
Early this morning, an error was made and a false alarm was sent to cell phones and to TV and radio. We investigated, and as soon as we became aware that it was an error, we took action to send the notification that it was a false alarm. You know, this should not have happened. We are investigating the sequence of events that occurred. An error was made in emergency management, which allowed this false alarm to be sent.
Yeah. And it took 38 minutes to correct?
Because they didn't have a system in place, Dan, to issue that it was a false alarm. So they have to work on that, too.
Well, no, the official story was they had to get approval from some other FEMA office giving them permission to issue a correction. Well, how does that take 38 minutes? We just sent out the old ballistic missile attack alert. We got a call into FEMA. We're waiting for the high sign to issue a correction because we know it's false. So, you know, smoke them if you got them. We'll wait to hear from FEMA. Then we'll get around to
but
that.
But here's the thing. I mean, this could be a blessing in disguise because there are not a lot of bunkers available for people. And a lot of Chicagoans who are vacationing in Hawaii, BBM Radio interviewed a woman who she's got a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old kid. And she's like, I didn't know where to go. I'm prepared for tornadoes here. I understand about earthquakes. But when you have that warning system coming through on your cell phone, where do you go? I mean, that's the thing. You're in a resort. Where does everybody go?
Go to the water.
Go to the water.
Right. It's a, that's not a, that's not a valued target. So if there was a ballistic missile attack.
Get on a little boat.
Well, it depends on how much time you have. But
maybe you can get a boogie board?
I would go to the beach.
Yeah, that's.
And if you're going to be annihilated, you know, at least enjoy the view before.
Survival
the
tips
missiles hit.
With Dan Prof.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I mean, it's just.
I shouldn't laugh, but I just, that broke my heart when I saw that video.
It's like
so scary.
It's like a couple of guys are by the water cooler talking, and somebody actually leans back and hits the button.
Whoa!
I mean, come on.
You had to press it twice too. That's what's so strange.
This is like a Simpsons episode. That's why I think there's something else here. That's I wonder. I know you had the fall guy there taking responsibility for accidentally pressing a button twice. Mm-hmm. That's how, I accidentally stabbed somebody 7 times. I mean,
stabby.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying, I'm not sure the official story clears up this matter, particularly the time between the false alert being issued and people putting their kids in storm drains. Then it being corrected.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, I mean, if this happens again and if it's real, are people going to believe it?
The civil defense.
The congresswoman.
That cried wolf, yeah.
What makes me angry is, yes, that this false alarm went out and we have to fix that in Hawaii, but really we've got to get to the underlying issue here of why are the people of Hawaii in this country facing a nuclear threat coming from North Korea today, and what is this president doing urgently to eliminate that threat?
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, what is the president doing to eliminate the butt dial over at Hawaiian Emergency Management Association as according to their story? Okay. All right, Tulsi. Ed in Oakbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very scary situation, and if you see many movies about that, it is horrible. But what's even worse is the liberals condemning Trump like it's his fault. And what this basically does is send a signal to the world that, you know what, like that little creep in North Korea can probably say and do whatever he wants, and the liberals will probably support that little creep. So, you know what, if this country would stand behind its president, maybe he can get something done with North Korea. But this division, Sean Penn and all those other jerks, you know what, it's only going to undermine the president. Have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Ed.
What does Sean Penn have to do with anything?
Moscow in flames, missiles headed toward New York. Film at 11.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What everybody was talking about on the Sunday talkies was, of course, President Trump's alleged asshole comment, which is now the subject of some dispute.
Yeah, I mean, Republicans are split on whether or not he used an expletive. And I just don't understand how some could hear something and others hear nothing at all.
It's unclear to me, but David Perdue, senator from Georgia, mm-hmm. was on with Clinton Foundation Donor Zero on Sunday. And they went round and round on the topic of what Trump said or didn't say.
In the Senate, how do you respond to what we just heard from Congressman Lewis, that he believes President Trump is a racist?
Well, of course, I think that's ridiculous. I grew up in the South. I fully understand what that means.
So first, if he said what he said, is he a racist? And Perdue saying no, Lewis saying yes. Mia Love also saying so on Jake Tapper's State of the Union.
Were the comments racist, do you think?
I think they were, yes. I think that they were unfortunate. I don't know if they were taken. I wasn't in the room. I know the comments were made. I don't know which context they were made. I'm looking forward to finding out what happened. But more importantly, I'm looking forward to trying to fix the problem. I think we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Well, someone that was in the room, Senator Cotton, he claims he didn't hear a thing.
I didn't hear that word either. I certainly didn't hear what Senator Durbin has said repeatedly.
So you're saying in that room you didn't hear any of this sort of lumping everybody together. Is that what you're saying?
I did not hear derogatory comments
about
individuals or persons. No.
Okay. So this sentiment is totally phony as well that is attributed to him.
Yes.
It's a very specific denial. I didn't hear derogatory comments or sentiments about individuals.
Yeah, but Dick Durbin said he...
That's a matter of how Cotton may have interpreted that he was referring to the country, meaning the government, not the people
in the country
who are citizens of that country. And that's sort of what David Perdue started with before he issued the flat denial. David Perdue, Georgia senator, talking about, kind of woefully mischaracterized was Durbin's contention about what the president said.
The gross misrepresentation was that language was used in there that was not used, and also that the tone of that meeting was not contributory and not constructive. In 2013, Senator Durbin also made the same accusation against a Republican leader in a meeting with President Obama and said that it was he chewed out the president. It was so disrespectful to President Obama, we couldn't even have the meeting. That's what he said in 2013. Later that day, the president's own press secretary came out and said, and I quote, "It did not happen." This is about a gross misrepresentation. It's not the first time.
Well, I concede his point about the duplicity of one Durbin bag. There's no question
about
that.
Well, Dick Durbin was shaking. He was emotional. He was out of his mind when he heard when he was listening to those words allegedly come from President Trump.
And that's when he used those sickening, heartbreaking remarks, saying, "Those assholes send us the people that they don't want." He repeated that. He didn't just say it one time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Put me down for wanting more Europeans to come to this country. Why don't we get more people from Norway?" That was exactly what the president said.
Mm-hmm. David Perdue went round and round with Stephanopoulos on this topic, pressed on the matter. Did he say asshole?
But you're saying flat out, definitively, the president did not say those words.
I'm saying that this is a gross misrepresentation. It's not the first time Senator Durbin has done it, and it is not productive to solving the problem.
So what did the president say?
All right, one more time, ask the question, see if we can get an answer specifically on point. Here's the third try.
Are you saying the president did not use the word that has been so widely reported?
I'm telling you he did not use that word, George, and I'm telling you it's a gross misrepresentation. How many times do you want me to say that?
All right, he didn't use the word, and it's a gross misrepresentation.
Folks, I say look no further than Lindsey Graham, his golfing buddy, the person first to always jump and praise President Trump when he does something right. He said that he has made his peace with it, and that was it. He was in the room because people asked him. There's six Republicans in there, two. One said nothing at all when they released the statement. Two said that he never said that, Cotton and Perdue. And Lindsey Graham came out and just said, "I have made my peace with the president."
Well,
what does that mean?
So there's and you know, by the way, of course, this is going to be used by the left, frankly, like deplorables was used by Trump during the election over the weekend. Did you see the S-hole was projected onto Trump's D.C. hotel?
No, I did not.
There's a huge S-hole,
really?
You know, that was projected with a light from a distance. And it also had the poop emoji, which is a nice touch. And then pay Trump bribes here. Emoluments welcome. All of that was projected onto Trump's hotel. So the Antifa folks are enjoying this. But there is this underlying question, not about the judiciousness of using language like that in the way that he used it. But it's the issue that's implicit. Does country of origin matter? The fundamental question when it comes to thinking about immigration policy is it the immigrants' interests that are preeminent or the country's? In other words, because if we don't care about, I should say, if the perspective is, it's about the immigrant's interest, it's about the person who wants to come here, their interests, well, then why would we care about whether they're on welfare or able to be self-sustaining or anything else? Because we're looking at it through their eyes. Or is it about our country's interests? That's it, like a first principle type of question. And when you answer that question, you start to get down the path into policy consistent with that answer. It seems to me that the two parties are answering the question differently. One, the Democrats are saying, we looked at immigration through the eyes of the person who wants to come here.
Right.
And Republicans are saying, we look at immigration through the eyes of what is in our country's best interests. So who's right? Which answer should inform our immigration policy? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let's go to Paul in Lake Forest. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Quick comments about Dick Durbin. I mean, when I was younger, three brothers, all played sports. Parents told us, and this is before molestation and raping became popular. The worst thing you could be was a tattletale. Don't come to us with what your brother did wrong. We don't want to know it. You guys figure it out. Somebody tattled on you at school. You got your buddies together. You beat the crap out of them. You never tattled on anybody ever again. So being a tattletale was the worst type of characteristic you could have. This Dick Durbin, and I'm going to have to bathe after I mention his name to you guys one more time. This gutless punk is the scum of the earth to be in on a private meeting with the president, and the guy blurts out a word, and I'm sure he said it. You can say these things in private. It's supposed to be in private. You're trying to run a country, for goodness sake. He goes out and tattletales to the public?
Well, it's not private.
I mean,
if you're president.
I wish I were Donald. I were one of Donald Trump's brothers and take care of this the way it should be taken care of, like the way we took care of this stuff in Chicago. One more point, and then please, you guys can comment. I believe now, every time the Democrats say something, they should preface it by saying, in another attempt to distract from the Hillary Clinton arrest, we bring up assholes. We bring up DACA. We bring up this. It is so obvious that all they want to do is distract from what Hillary and Bill did, because when they take her down, down goes radical feminism, down goes the left-wing media, down goes Democrats, and they're done. They are are desperate, man. I smell desperation. Of desperation on Dick Durbin.
Thanks for the call, Paul.
President Trump did respond last night. He was at Mar-a-Lago, of course. He'll be there today, too, with Kevin McCarthy. They were walking outside, and somebody asked him, are you a racist?
No, I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed. That I can tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those questions like, when did you stop beating your wife? I mean, how do you answer that? It's an idiotic question. Are you racist? Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hello, Dan. Thank you for your opinion. I liked what I had to hear there was that we need to start thinking about what's good for the nation, not just what's good for the immigrant. And this is something that we have not talked about in my lifetime. I think it's something we need to seriously consider, because if we're thinking about every person who needs to come here, we could just invite, a billion people and let them change the whole country to be something that it isn't.
Thanks for the call, Dan. It'd be more than a billion. I mean, you're talking about 60% of the world doesn't have
clean water.
Doesn't have indoor plumbing, right. That reliable indoor plumbing. I mean, that's sort of relevant to the discussion. It can't just be sentimentalism, which is what the left offers. Even though when they're pressed on this, I want merit, of course merit. Because the point is that if we had a merit-based system, that doesn't mean people from Haiti or El Salvador or anywhere else wouldn't come here. It just means the standards have changed. There's a good piece of National Review, Country of Origin Matters, and the matters meaning matters in terms of one's projected self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And what does this mainly turn on? Education. It's no different in places. I mean, it's no different in terms of education being the pathway to independence in Central American or Middle Eastern or Asian or African countries than it is in our country. And how much time do we spend talking about the woeful state of K-12 education in urban centers like Chicago? Why? Because it matters. It is directly related to one's ability to be self-sufficient, if that's something that you care about. If it's not, if it's just like somebody wants to come here and they have very little chance of being self-sufficient, and if they go on the welfare state and become another dependent, that's fine. Well, that's a different perspective, but at least we should flush those positions out into the open so they can be honestly debated. Greg in LaGrange, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I guess my whole frustration in all of this, and I do believe Trump said it was a private meeting, but Dick Durbin and Illinois belong together like nothing else.
Like stink on assholes.
I wish Exactly. But, you know, I guess my whole point is, why can't the Republicans come to the final question and just say to the Democrats, just let's expose their endgame. Just say, if we give the children, DACA children, a path to citizenship and their immediate families, will that satisfy you? Then can we get tight on the border? Then can we be strong on immigration? Then can we evaluate people coming into the country, whether or not they're going to be a drain on our welfare system? Why can't the Republicans put this to Chuck Schumer or Dick Durbin and say, when is enough enough? What do you want open? Basically, do you want open borders or do you not want open borders? Let's get that question out right now.
Thanks for the call, Greg. By the way, the president did tweet out on Sunday that DACA is probably dead because the Democrats don't really want it. They just want to talk and take desperately needed money away from the military.
I think DACA might be dead because of his comments that he made, that the president made.
Why would that make DACA dead?
What lawmakers are going to want to work with a president who thinks people from certain countries are blank holes?
So are you familiar with American history and, I don't know, Lyndon Baines Johnson's very liberal use of the N-word? Are you familiar with Woodrow Wilson, who screened Birth of a Nation in the White House and lamented about the South winning the Civil War? You think this is the first president who's ever had a potty mouth or said something untoward? There have been presidents much worse, particularly in retrospect. But even in the moment, they should have been seen as nasty and racist as they were. LBJ, Woodrow Wilson, just two examples. So who wants to work with them? This is about policy. They have constituents, too. They want to get DACA done, don't they? Or do they want to see it go away on March 5th?
No, they want to get it done.
So why would they say, well, we're not going to play now because you used a potty word? Literally? Yemi on the north side. Hey, Yemi.
Hi, good morning, Dan. How are you? Actually, I don't know what to believe if actually President Trump made that comment. But what I want to say, because I'm from Nigeria, when are all those Democratic senators and Republican senators going to stand actually for the people in Nigeria against their government that, you know, kind of screwed their economy for them to, you know, fly or flew to other countries? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Yemi. Appreciate your support.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Martin Luther King's birthday today. We're in the year of the 50th anniversary of his assassination, April 4th, 1968. You know how I've remembered that date since I was in grade school. So one of the projects, my eighth grade teacher, Mrs. Flynn, over at St. Michael's.
The St. Michael's?
The St. Michael's, the Mrs. Flynn. Great teacher. She's there for like 50
great.
Years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Is she still there? Or is
yeah.
She finally? Really?
Yeah. Awesome.
We should have had her call in
this
morning.
That's Catholic school for you.
Yeah.
A little hat tip for you parents out there. Or a little tip, I should say. And a hat tip to Mrs. Flynn. So one of the projects that we did is everybody in class had to pick it, you know, as a way of really learning history. Mm-hmm. Everybody in class had to pick a year and then write a newspaper about that year.
Oh,
the top
cool.
stories in politics and world events and sports and culture
too, yeah.
And right, like a newspaper when, you know, the era where newspapers actually existed. I picked 1968. So it was such a great experiment. It's a great assignment because you get beyond just memorizing April 4th, 1968, and you get into learning about the newsmakers from that year that you had to dedicate to your project. So that's how I remembered and started to really learn a lot about Martin Luther King Jr. And so we certainly remember him on this day. And one of the things that's interesting to me, and I was reading some of the kind of op-eds you get around the time of Martin Luther King's birthday, is the left reiterating this point that I've heard many people make. White America has made Martin Luther King safe, but he was really a revolutionary. Yeah, he was. Yeah. I agree. I agree he was a revolutionary. Now that we have agreement, let's build on that. Because in the immortal words of Thomas Jefferson, a little rebellion now and then is a good thing. It is to the political world what storms are to the physical world. So the question is, if Martin Luther King was this great revolutionary, and he was, and thank God he was, thank God he wasn't pedestrian. Thank God he wasn't just another hustler, political hack. So if that's the model of revolution to deal with injustice, then why is it so many on the left and the center right, frankly, settle for the political hack du jour, the next in line sentinel of the welfare state, both on the left and the center right? If a revolutionary like King was able to do what many people would have scoffed at his ability to do, to lead the charge for an end to de jure segregation, then why do we settle for the hacks that we have today? And nowhere, and that includes the quote-unquote self-appointed leaders of the black community, as well as the political ruling class locally and nationally. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We're going to talk to Walter Williams at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, George Mason University economist, part of the civil rights movement in the 60s. Also in The Hill, our friend Bob Woodson, who founded the Woodson Center. This is a nonprofit that helps residents of low-income neighborhoods address problems in their communities. We've talked about Woodson on the show before. He was also involved in the civil rights movement. He writes in The Hill, truly honoring the legacy of Dr. King is his piece. Today, King would be appalled if he were to come back and witness the wholesale dismantling of the rich legacy for which he and so many fought and died in the civil rights movement. The noble struggle for equal rights has morphed into a race grievance industry. He goes on to say that the race grievance industry, which he then details at some length, the aspiring young person of color today is basically told, don't bother struggling against your circumstances. The larger realities of your race have already determined that you cannot succeed in white society. Nothing could be further from the message of Dr. Martin Luther King. To honor him rightfully on this day, is to the day that is dedicated in his name, would be to remember the rich legacy of mutual aid, self-determination, and personal responsibility that enable blacks to achieve remarkable victories in spite of daunting odds and oppression, and to look at the oases of excellence in low-income communities today where those same values are producing inspiring models of achievement. Does Bob Woodson have it generally correct, do you think? I think he does. Shelby Steele, mm-hmm. in the Wall Street Journal of the weekend, our friend Shelby Steele, even a more provocative statement. The oppression of black people is over with. This is politically incorrect news, but it is true nonetheless. We blacks are today a free people. It is as if freedom sneaked up and caught us by surprise. Of course, this doesn't mean there's no racism left in American life. Racism is endemic to the human condition, just as stupidity is. Always have to be on guard against that. But now it's recognized as a scourge, as the crowning immorality of our age and our history. So if protest tries to make a point, what is the point of the current protest? It's just the race grievance industry that Bob Woodson writes about, isn't it? That's what it seems to me. Martin Luther King, by comparison, how about his great, one of my favorite speeches from Martin Luther King, perhaps my favorite. It's mm-hmm. the street sweeper speech that he gave at New Covenant Church in Chicago just about a year before his assassination in April of 67. Martin Luther King, the street sweeper.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, go on out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote portraits. Sweet Street so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are.
Does that sound like anything you hear from the self-appointed civil rights leaders and politicians of the left who like to carry on this topic today? Does that ring familiar at all? Does that sound like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton or pick your MSNBC host or frankly, even people that were heroes of the civil rights movement? John Lewis, the congressman from Georgia. Does that sound like what John Lewis is saying today? Maybe he should go back and re-listen to some of these Martin Luther King speeches. Because as Shelby Steele points out in his journal op-ed, there was a specific point. There was a moral calling. And King was, of course, right. And what he did was hold up our stated principles and say, is the treatment of Black Americans consistent with these principles? And obviously it wasn't. King, go ahead.
Do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would be approve of the Black Lives Matter movement or Antifa?
Did you think that the Black Lives Matter movement or Antifa is saying anything commensurate with what you just heard from King?
No. And it takes an aggressive, I mean, there are aggressive groups, and I don't think Martin Luther King would approve of it.
Well, and it's not to say, like, you know, I'm not going to get into this, like, this stupid Martin Luther King would be a Republican today. I'm not doing that. Talking about the substance of Martin Luther King and the basis for the movement, you know. But when it comes to economics, you know, you argue about this too. Martin Luther King was a capitalist, and or he was a socialist, and he certainly has flirtation with socialism. But in a letter in 1952, he details. Well, he demonstrates that he was more radical than people may have thought, but. But also, I imagine you already know that I'm much more socialistic in my economic theory than capitalistic. And yet I'm not so opposed to capitalism that I fail to see its relative merits. It started out with noble and high motive to block the trade monopolies of nobles. But like most human system, it falls victim to the very thing it was revolting against. So today, capitalism has outlived its usefulness. It has brought about a system that takes necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes. So it's 52. Other writings from King and remarks that he made suggest that he moved off of that a little bit. But so, you know, he's a complicated figure. He's a man who had human failings like we all do. He's not a god. He was just a great leader and the right leader for this to right this moral wrong. But King's mountaintop speech, the day before his assassination in Memphis.
Yeah.
Remember this? This was at the Mason Temple in Memphis. It's eerie, if you recall, because...
Did he make some prophetic statements?
Basically, you know, and you'll remember this when you hear it. But first, before you get to I've been to the mountaintop, he laid out the case, what I said previously about holding our principles as enshrined in our founding documents up against the treatment of Black Americans and saying, are those two things consistent? And obviously the answer was no.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
pretty compelling case he makes. And this is the kind of eerie prophetic statement.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Still gives me the chills.
Well, I mean, he's an unbelievable thinker and speaker. Philip in Blue Island, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, happy Dr. King Day to everybody. And, you know, to hear this speech of I Had a Dream, and that's basically what, I don't know why they just want to focus on those speeches or that particular speech, because he has kind of evolved into a more conscientious and after being beaten and stabbed and all these different things that has happened to him in America, at the end of being killed and shot and killed, he was coming to the point where he did meet with Malcolm X, and he was meeting with other groups that were the Black Panthers and other groups that weren't so, quote-unquote, like you want to put them up with Black Lives Matter, which is crazy. But, you know, Dr. King was changing, and, I mean, he had come to the point where he has quoted as saying that he has realized that we actually integrated into a burning building. So he was feeling bad about some of the decisions that he made, especially when it comes to integration, because once we started integrating, then all the Black businesses went down because Blacks started supporting white businesses. And you see how that has worked out for us, to where basically, you know, we don't have any businesses in the Black community anymore.
But it has nothing, and that has nothing to do with the Great Society, does it?
Well, it kind of does, because once we started believing, drinking the Kool-Aid of integration and of anti-segregation, we thought we can get along, and we thought that if we were to patronize you, that you would, whites would patronize.
What is that? I'm sorry.
Loving each other, and that's what Philip, I got integrated into a burning building.
Yeah, okay.
And he comes to Chicago and get hit with a stone.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm sorry, Philip, your filibuster is over. I'm sorry, I asked a question about the welfare state, and you're talking about patronizing businesses.
What about the welfare state? I mean, if you eliminate jobs, if you're not hiring because of the color of somebody's skin, or just look at the society at large. If you have slums and you have all these different entities in the slums with the drugs and alcohol and the gambling and the prostitution, and you're growing up in this, and it's a cycle of degradation that you're growing up in. So once you get older and then you end up in prison, people like conservatives or like yourself would look at these people as less than, or as they're such a problem.
Actually, but don't. Actually,
not doing anything to fix these things.
Actually, Philip, you have to let other people talk. Actually, let me tell you something. Don't tell me what I think. You know so much about me. You want to know what I think?
Ask me.
All right, see your actions. Yeah, Philip, I understand. You want to go back to segregation. You think that's the answer. It's fascinating. And the welfare state is funny, because those problems that you describe were certainly less pronounced, I mean significantly less pronounced, than under Jim Crow. And the racist government-sponsored oppression of Black people. And so actually, you don't want to answer the question, because you know what the Great Society and the welfare state has done. So you're exactly who, forget my words, Philip, Bob Woodson and Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell and Shelby Steele, who were there? I wasn't. They were. They were radicals, too. And then they grew up, speaking of people growing up. And they did assessments of the choices that were made and the impacts that were delivered. The assessment that you don't want to do. You're who Woodson and Steele and Williams and Soule and so many others are talking about. And despite King's meetings with the Black Panthers and so on and so forth, I mean, this is a political movement, too. So you have different institutions and people, organizations play different roles. But everything you said is a completely at odds with the clips that we played from Dr. Martin Luther King. And by the way, as per usual, setting up straw man to argue with, like so many of your philosophical ilk do. We didn't play a clip from the I Have a Dream speech. But that's all you got. I get it.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
It's that time of year again. Cold and snow here. 2 to 4 inches today we're going to get. So it's, you know, it's nasty out there, but you want to go somewhere warm and sunny, and that's Riviera Maya, Mexico. Today's high, 84 degrees there. Mostly sunny skies. And that's where we're heading with Apple Vacations. And you're invited to come along with us. We'll be staying at the beautiful Secrets Maroma Beach, Riviera Cancun Resort and Spa in Riviera Maya, Mexico. 9 gourmet restaurants, 6 bars, unlimited premium drinks, 24-hour room service. It's beautiful. I mean, unlimited luxury, adults only. So you won't hear anybody go, Mom, Mom, Mom. The resort is situated. You get that all the time, right, Dan? Every day. Situated on Maroma Beach, and it's one of the world's best beaches. So get more information and book your trip by visiting 560theanswer.com/passport. The price that Apple Vacations has secured for us is incredible and exclusive to us, but it's only available for a limited time. We already know some regulars have signed up. Rick and Debbie are going. Janice Ray and Jonathan are going from Kansas, our good friends. So come to this trip. You're going to have the best time ever. 560theanswer.com/passport.
What's that, Amy?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy continues now. And make sure to stay tuned to catch me, Mike Gallagher, coming up at 9, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. And report out of Axios. That Speaker Pelosi,
yes,
already baked into the cake. Republicans already conceding they're going to lose the House in November. 24 seats have to flip. I think the average turnover in president's midterm election is like 32, average of recent times at least. And so I think the House is gone, and nothing you can do about it. Our friend Joe Trippi penned an op-ed a week or so ago that we discussed that suggests something much more aggressive than that. In fact, that contagion could spread to the Senate, despite the fact that there are many more incumbent Dems up than incumbent Republicans, including in red states like West Virginia, Indiana, North Dakota, that Trump won by a significant margin. He thinks that you can replicate the Doug Jones victory in Alabama across the nation. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Joe Trippi, Fox News contributor, former campaign manager for Howard Dean, author of the book The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Joe, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you. I need to correct one thing. I'm now at CNN.
CNN. I'm sorry. All right, CNN. CNN got that. CNN. All right, CNN contributor. Got that. Do you think, but before we get to your op-ed and the focus on the Senate to some extent, what about the idea that Speaker Pelosi is a mortal lock, according to some insiders chirping to Axios, that the House is going to be turned over in November?
Well, nothing's ever a mortal lock. But as you pointed out, you know, Democrats need 23, 24, you know, 25 in that range seats. And, you know, the average change is 32. That's with
presidents that have like a 45% approval rating. Barack Obama, for instance, in his first midterm, had a 45% approval, and what happened there was I think it was something like we lost 63 seats.
Yeah.
So and the House. So it's not a lock, but just, you know, by the numbers and where this president's approval ratings are, you'd have to. I mean, they're much lower than where recent presidents have been in their first term. So you'd have to. I don't know that it's a lock, but you know that's where things are headed right now.
Well, on the Senate side, I mean, you know, make your case per your op-ed in USA Today about replicating the Doug Jones victory in Alabama. I mean, you don't have the advantage of running against Roy Moore and all these other states. You can say what you want, but for example,
there's not going to be sex scandals everywhere.
Well, let's just say Indiana. I mean, like Congressman Todd Rokita, if he's the Republican nominee against Joe Donnelly, that's not Roy Moore, Doug Jones matchup.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a mistake to think that Roy Moore and the sexual allegations hurt him. It's a really bizarre. You couldn't make this up, but what happened was those charges, as they came up, Republicans actually started to Roy Moore. Again, it's fake news. It's the Washington Post. It's Mitch McConnell trying to stop him. It's the Washington elites. They're all lies, fake yearbook. And it actually, in a very strange way, was not helpful to us. So I don't, you know, I think first just discount that. What I think is happening here is that obviously, you know, Democrats are very energized. The Democratic base is turning out, not just in Alabama, but Virginia, New Jersey. The problem you've got, the Republicans have, is that, you know, a sizable piece of the Republican Party strongly embraces what Trump is doing and saying. And they are energized by it and thrilled by it when he does things, including his recent comments about Haiti. When they did or did not happen, doesn't matter, right? The problem is there are a lot of Republicans, and particularly independents, particularly Republican women, who are appalled by it and are tired of it. And that's the group that is joining, that's coming over. That's what's creating these victories on the Democratic side. And that certainly can happen in places like Arizona and Texas, even with Ted Cruz and some of these other states. So I'm not saying that we take the Senate yet, but I do think it's very difficult for me to see how the Republicans continue to. I mean, I don't recall trying to straddle both those groups in the Republican Party is can they sustain that all the way through November and somehow pull both groups in within the party? I don't see it working right now. Maybe they can get it to work.
Well, definitely Republicans are split on whether he used an expletive or not when describing, you know, people coming in from
right.
certain countries. But do you think the comment that he made, will that stop DACA from being resolved probably by Friday or even by March 5th?
I wouldn't predict that. I don't know. I mean, you've got out of the White House, how do we negotiate with people who are calling me racist, you know, calling the president racist and vile? And on the other side, how do we, you know, you got Democrats saying, how do we in good faith negotiate with someone we think is those things, or using
yeah.
that language.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how that those two sides and look, you know, that was the meeting. That's where this all happened. And was the president had said, hey, bring me a bill that you all bipartisanly agree on and I'll sign it. Anything you bring. And they brought it. And then, you know, we get this, you know, two sides of the story about what happened in the room. But what no one's denying is that whatever happened, whatever the president said, he blew the whole thing up and isn't signing it. So
you know, therein, you know, if somebody can predict where this is all going to land. And that gets back to what I'm talking about. It's the chaos of this presidency that's wearing down many Republicans. I mean, I never thought I'd say that, but not his base, not his core support, but a lot of the Republicans who gave him the benefit of the doubt are starting not to do that. They're starting to get tired of that kind of chaos that, where, yeah, bring me something and I'll sign it, and then the meeting happens and it's all out the window. That's hurting not just him now, but a lot of the Republicans that are enabling him.
Yeah, although I got to tell you, I mean, I think most people are kind of results-oriented when it comes to politics. Name-calling and process doesn't have much currency, but whether or not you got something big done that you said you were going to get done, whether it's tax cuts or enhanced border security, the wall, as it were, proxy for that, that's what ultimately matters more, particularly to, you know, base Republican voters. But let me ask you this. Selena Zito has an interesting piece in the Washington Examiner. She talks about some of these red state incumbent Democrat senators like Donnelly and Manchin and McCaskill. And she suggests that one of the things that they're doing, perhaps to their mistake, is posturing for donors of the left rather than working for voters in their home states that are center right. And that, you know, they want to keep New York and San Francisco happy to the detriment of making sure they can get to 50% plus one in their home states. Do you think that's a fair concern?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that at least what I'm seeing is that voters are not, they're just not attuned to where people are getting their money from. I mean, it's on both sides. I've always been somebody who, like, when I started the Bean campaign, felt like, you know, we'd get small donations from everywhere and we'd wipe out big money in politics. Well, that didn't happen.
No.
How naive I was. But what I'm saying is that, ever since we thought, you know, people who are getting tons of money from corporate, you know, PACs would be hurt. That hasn't happened either. So I don't think, you know, it's, what's going on right now in our politics is people are focusing on other things, but they don't seem to my, you
no,
know,
no, but
I,
that, but that's not,
I'm not a fan of this.
That's,
they're not, they're, no,
they're, I get,
reacting to it.
I get what you're saying, but that's not quite her argument. I should be more explicit. So she's essentially saying the problem is they're focusing on their donors, satisfying their donors. So they're unwilling to work with the president. You didn't see Donnelly or Heitkamp at that bipartisan group meeting on immigration. They're not willing to vote for tax cuts because it's associated with Trump. That's what she's suggesting.
Yeah, I don't think that's as partisan as she's suggesting. I think that there, what I'm saying is that there are Republicans who are
Joe, we're losing you on the cell phone there a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think you're back. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that's a misunderstanding, I think, of what's happening, where Republicans, I'm not talking about half Republicans. I'm talking about enough Republicans are appalled by what's going on with the White House that they, too, are leaning towards these Democrats you're talking about. In other words, they don't see it as partisan the way this is getting, the way she wrote it. There are plenty of Republicans who do. In fact, needs to win. Democrats needs to pull in independents and enough Republicans, as Jones did in Alabama, to win in a state like Alabama. And I think that's what is going to happen in places like Indiana, and West Virginia, and these other states. That doesn't mean it's not going to be easy, but it's doable because of this president.
All right. He is Joe Trippi, former campaign manager for Howard Dean, as he mentioned, author of the book, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and a CNN contributor. Joe, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Yeah, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, one note just on this weekend where we lost Keith Jackson.
Nelly.
We had, you had the great championship game on Monday with Alabama winning in overtime.
Yeah.
On a, you know, heroic pass after a 15-yard loss. And then you had even more drama yesterday in the Vikings game where the last play of the game, after the Saints had come all the way back to take a one-point lead, 4 seconds left, 61 yards away from the end zone, and this happens.
Steps into it. Passes. Caught. Diggs. Sideline. Touchdown. Unbelievable. Vikings win it.
They're calling it the Minneapolis Miracle.
Yeah. It deserves a oh my and a whoa Nelly.
And
by the way, Stephon Diggs, not good enough to play for the Bears.
Yeah, that's what they decided. How do you feel for that rookie who forgot to tackle him? He was going for the feet.
He didn't forget to.
Well, he said he was trying to get him at the legs instead of the body. And
yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't work out. But Diggs, of course, I mean, he was in shock, and he had tears in his eyes.
Since I first got here, I never stopped working. Today was when all the work paid off. And, you know, God put me in a position, and I just try to take advantage of my opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I love his theme music, too, that accompanies him wherever he is.
Yeah, that follows him around everywhere. But he thanked God for the blessings in his life. And I love, 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 love when athletes do that.
And here's the little advice for that rookie cornerback for the Saints.
Yeah.
You want to go for the legs. I mean, he missed the legs by 4 feet because his head was down. You want to go for the legs.
Look at
what you're trying to tackle. Case Keenum, Minnesota's quarterback, also tweeted out, third best moment in his life.
Well, giving birth. Does he have kids yet?
Giving his life to Jesus Christ, number one.
Awesome.
Marrying his wife, number two.
Ooh.
Last second game-winning touchdown, sending the Vikings to the NFC Championship game, number three. Now,
I
don't want to create controversy or a quibble with Case Keenum in his moment, but
you're being a homewrecker. Yes.
I would say that passing Timmy Chang for most passing yards in NCAA history would be number two. And then the touchdown yesterday, three, and then the wife, maybe four.
Oh, my gosh. You can't bump her down. Hey, honey, about that tweet, I've reconsidered. And
I mean,
you're number four now. It's not bad. You're still top five.
After that performance yesterday, he doesn't have to pander to his wife. He doesn't have to pander to anybody.
He loves God, and he loves his family.
He loves football,
and he's really good at it. I can't wait for them to beat Philadelphia this weekend.
And my beloved Steelers lost, of course, because, one, their defense is a little suspect at 45 points at home. Number two, Mike Tomlin's fourth down calls, fourth and short calls, two of them. You know, Ben Roethlisberger this year was 17 for 18 on fourth and short when it was just a QB keeper, a quarterback sneak.
Really?
And they go wide, and then they throw a 15-yard square out. What the hell? What the hell, Tomlin? Nice job. Way to ruin my weekend.
Are you demanding his resignation?
No. You know, like Vikings. Minnesota, you know, they have Garrison Keillor. They lost. They lost to Al Franken. It's been a tough season. Then they get this. Been a tough season for me too, and I don't get a playoff victory.
Well, if they win the NFC Championship and go to the Super Bowl, they don't have to go far because it's in their hometown.
Yeah, great. They can lose to the Patriots at home. Big deal.
My son asked me yesterday. Eli said, "Mom, when are the Patriots going to stink? When is that coming?" I said, "You know what, son? Growing up, it was always the Steelers and the Cowboys. You know, we just waited for the Bears' turn and waited. But sometimes you have to wait a while."
Yeah.
I don't know if the
waiting for the Bears turn. Continue. You think 33 years has been a while. Think Cubs.
Well, the Vikings have never been to a Super Bowl. The Eagles have never been.
They've been to.
They've never won the Super Bowl. The Eagles have never won.
Yes,
the Super Bowl, and
Super
the Jacksonville Bowl. Jaguars have never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
but they're a new franchise. New.
And all three of those teams will still be able to say they've never won a Super Bowl after the first Sunday in February. That's the problem. Good grief. All right. We got to get a little Keith Jackson. How about a little Keith Jackson memory lane? I mean, 60 years of broadcasting, and then we lost to Denver. We lose Keith Jackson. How about a little Keith Jackson remembrances? He was a colorful guy.
When the last glow drifts away from the big house at Michigan, it's a good time to have a seat and listen. Here, Yost, Kipke, Chrysler. And in your mind's eye, see the lads who wore the colors. Harmon, who played both ways all the way to a Heisman Trophy and got a standing ovation once at the Horseshoe.
The Michigan football team is within sight of the summit of their mountain, their journey inspiration in part from those who have climbed the world's highest mountain.
But when you venture into the biggest house in football, you better come prepared lest ye perish at the hands of the big burly resident. For this is a house of history, a house of pride and tradition.
Yeah.
You got me all fired up.
The big
up
house.
Now.
The big house was one of Keith Jacksonism, calling Ann Arbor the big house.
Yeah, that's right. But also his key phrases, whoa, Nelly. And he got that from?
Whoa, Nelly came from my great grandpa. He was a farmer. He was a whistler, one of these guys. He was always working and always busy, and but he really didn't whistle. He just kind of, one of those, you know. Uh-huh. And then he would do something or drop something or whatever, and oftentimes you'd hear him say, whoa, Nelly, whoa, Nelly, that kind of stuff. And it's kind of stuck to the little scruffy kid following him around. And
oh, my.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Welcome to our Martin Luther King Day edition. We've spoken about King early in the 6 o'clock hour and played some memories from his speeches. Talked a little bit about the state of race relations nearly 50 years after his assassination. We're going to talk to Walter Williams more about that at 7:37, so you want to stay tuned for that. But we got a couple of important candidate announcements, Amy.
Who do you want to start with? Martha, which lady?
Martha Martha McSally, original equipment. Let's start there.
Oh, okay.
Martha McSally, of course, the fighter pilot slash congresswoman from Arizona, has announced she's running for the Senate seat being vacated by Jeff Flake, much to the chagrin of Amy's best friend, Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Here's her announcement video. She's got a message for her colleagues. Wait for it.
26 years in uniform. She's taken the fight to the enemy and the establishment.
The U.S. Air Force decided Martha McSally had the right stuff. The first female pilot to fly in combat. Colonel McSally is not afraid of a good fight. She has launched a one-woman campaign against a military policy in Saudi Arabia that forced her to wear a long black Islamic robe over her Air Force uniform.
I absolutely refuse to bow down to Sharia law. After 8 years of fighting, I won my battle for the religious freedom of American servicewomen. Now I'm deployed to D.C. to fight for Arizona, supporting our troops and saving the A-10, protecting Arizona jobs and securing the border.
My friend Martha McSally, she's the real deal. She's tough.
Like our president, I'm tired of PC politicians and their BS excuses. I'm a fighter pilot and I talk like one. That's why I told Washington Republicans to grow a pair of ovaries and get the job done. Now I'm running for the Senate to fight the fights that must be won on national security, economic security, and border security. After taking on terrorists in combat, the liberals in the Senate won't scare me one bit.
Patriot, warrior, leader, Martha McSally for United States Senate.
In response to that challenge to grow a pair of ovaries.
Ovaries.
Chelsea Manning asked, is it okay if I have them transplanted in? Because she's also running for U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
He is also running for U.S. Senate.
No, she got the operation done.
The
naughty bits are gone.
What about the Y chromosome?
I don't know. She's working on that.
Uh-huh. So is it XX or XY?
I don't know, but she's going against incumbent Democrat Ben Cardin.
He is going against Ben Cardin. Well, I don't care what it says.
So, I mean, the thing is, you know, Manning was infamously convicted for passing along a massive trove of documents to WikiLeaks, and President Obama commuted most of him's sentence.
Oh, the good news is, for those of you wondering, hey, can a convicted felon run for U.S. Senate? Yes, he can. A felony conviction, which yes. Manning has... No bar to him running for Senate.
Well, I mean, could you vote for someone who illegally released confidential military documents?
How about someone who's running on an F the police platform?
Manny tweeted the F the police on Law Enforcement Appreciation Day.
Guess he doesn't appreciate them.
But listen to this ad, because when I heard it, I thought, oh, is she going to run as a Republican? But she's Shim is running as a Democrat, but bashing the Democratic Party.
I'm Chelsea Manning, and I approve this message.
live in trying times. Times of fear. Of suppression. Of hate. We don't need more or better leaders. We need someone willing to fight. We need to stop asking them to give us our rights. Great. They won't support us. They won't compromise. We need to stop expecting that our systems will somehow fix themselves. We need to actually take the reins of power from them. We need to challenge them at every level. We need to fix this. We don't need them anymore. We can do better. You're damn right we got this.
And she's wearing a fetching leather jacket, walking through, you know, the rough part of town in Baltimore. And but there's pictures, images of Democratic politicians and Republican politicians. So really, she should be running as an independent.
Notwithstanding Martha Sally's kind of, I don't know, cheap rhetoric and flacking for a local government contractor to save the A-10. That's not particularly anti-establishment. Notwithstanding that, could you better crystallize the paths the two parties are currently on? Martha McSally for Republicans, mm-hmm, and this dude Chelsea in Maryland for Democrats, who tweeted out F the police, also tweeted out part of his platform, apparently, for his Senate campaign. Abolish ICE.
A what?
Abolish ICE.
Oh.
ICE is literally the new Gestapo, tweeted Chelsea Manning, convicted felon. Oh, yeah. Just to remind you about that. Taxpayer-funded gender reassignment surgery. Forgot to remind you about that.
And hormone replacement. That's not cheap either.
I mean, it's just, what a great juxtaposition. Martha McSally and Chelsea Manning announcing their respective candidates for, mm-hmm, Senate. There's a sort of great proxies for the choice between the two parties and the choice between the two paths for America. One, a patriotic path that's reflective of foundational values, and the other, cultural Marxism. Your choice.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Of course, memorializing Martin Luther King's birthday today, this 2018, a couple months away from the 50th anniversary of his assassination, April 4th, 1968. And So I can't play some of these clips enough. They're just so great. Who talks like this anymore? I wish more people did. Martin Luther King, in one of my favorite speeches, the street sweeper speech that he gave here in Chicago, New Covenant Church, about almost exactly a year before his assassination.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, go on out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are.
I mean, he writes poetry like Shakespeare. In addition to that, just this other clip, because I think it's relevant to our discussion today. This is the speech he gave at the Mason Temple in Memphis the night before he was assassinated. A rather prophetic speech. This is the On the Mountaintop speech. Not going to play that part. But the part in the beginning where he essentially holds America's stated values up for display and says, are people living up to these values as enshrined in our founding documents? Of course, the answer was no. But can we do that today? can we honestly do the mirror test that Martin Luther King put to us in 1968?
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Now we're pleased to be joined by somebody who was there, generally speaking, during that period. He is another great, the great Walter Williams, His Eminence of Economics at George Mason University. Professor Williams, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. And so some of your contemporaries opined on the occasion of Martin Luther King's birthday today. And one of them is Shelby Steele, who had a piece in The Wall Street Journal over the weekend. And he said this, the oppression of black people is over with. This is politically incorrect news, but it's true nonetheless. We blacks are today a free people. It's as if freedom sneaked up and caught us by surprise. He goes on to say, we can say that past oppression left us unprepared for freedom. This is certainly true, but it's no consolation. Freedom is just freedom. It's a condition, not an agent of change. It doesn't develop or uplift those who win it. Freedom holds us accountable no matter the disadvantages we inherit from the past. Is Shelby Steele right about that?
I think he's absolutely right, and that's something I've said for years, that the civil rights struggle for black Americans in our country is over, and it has been won. That is, at one time, black Americans did not have the constitutional guarantees of everybody else in our country. Today, we do. Now, because the civil rights struggle is over and won, that does not mean that there are not major problems confronting the black community, such as education, crime, and family breakdown. These are major problems, but they're not civil rights problems. That is, they will not be solved by using civil rights strategies. That is, if you can sing "We Shall Overcome" all you want, but if blacks are murdering each other, as they are doing in great numbers in your country, in your city, and getting a fraudulent education, a grossly fraudulent education, where the average black 12th grader, he can read and write at the level of the average white 6th or 7th or 8th grader. Now, that's a major problem, but it's not a civil rights problem. That is, you take city of Baltimore. That's a city that's run. The blacks blacks have been mayors, chief of police, superintendent of schools, most of the members on the city council, but yet this fraudulent education goes on. And that's true in many cities, but it's not civil rights problems. It doesn't have anything to do with racial discrimination. And so I think that Dr. King's legacy, his battle that he fought, it's over and won, but we still have major problems that remain.
What do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would think of the Black Lives Matter movement and of Antifa?
Well, I think he would look at it with great disgust. That is, he was a man of peace. He was against the advocation of violence. And matter of fact, during his life, he had an ongoing battle with the black Muslims because they were more for using violence and confrontation. So I think that yes, he would be against this. The Antifa and Black Lives Matters.
And Bob Woodson, another contemporary, writing in The Hill about how to truly honor the legacy of Dr. King, says, among other things, the noble struggle for equal rights has morphed into a race grievance industry. think that's a little bit what you're speaking of. And the sad thing, it seems to me, is it even afflicts some actual heroes of the civil rights movement, like Congressman John Lewis from Georgia, who's bought into the race grievance industry, as Bob Woodson describes it.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. If we continue to look at them as racial discrimination problems, the problems are going to remain forever. That is, the very fact that 75% of black births are births out of wedlock, which is devastating to the black family structure and black welfare. If you want to consider that a civil rights problem, well, the problem's going to exist forever. The black people in Chicago and many other cities, they're not putting bars at their windows, huddled in the homes at night. They're not afraid of the Ku Klux Klan riding through, but they're afraid of other black people. So if you say, well, gee, we have to somehow do something about the Ku Klux Klan, well, the black people are going to be endangered forever.
Well, we all, aspire for racial harmony, but when President Trump makes the comments about people coming from blank hole countries, does that take us a step back, or where does that leave us?
Well, the president, if I were the president, I wouldn't use such language. But the point that he's making, if you ask the question about people coming to our country illegally, I mean, just ask yourself the question, how many Norwegians are in our country illegally and crowding up our jails? How many people from Finland? How many people from New Zealand? Those people coming to our country are not our problem. The people who are coming from South America, Latin America, and Africa and the Middle East, those people are our problems. Now, the president could have used different language, but he was surely right on the spot when he's talking about the kind of people who we're admitting into our country who are causing us major problems. Now, it's not politically correct to talk the way I am, but it's factual. That is, I've asked you, I gave the case of Norwegians, Finns, and New Zealanders, and others. How many of them causing problems, burdening our welfare system?
And the point that I think you're getting to, and that President Trump was trying to get to, is the point about a merit-based immigration system. It's not that we would exclude people from Haiti or El Salvador or sub-Saharan Africa or anywhere else. But the question is, what's the standard by which we're admitting people regardless of their country of origin? And the standard should be merit-based. They're going to contribute to this country as opposed to being a detriment to this country in some material way, right?
That is absolutely right. And the problem is made even worse by politicians in our country setting up sanctuary cities for people who are in our country illegally. I mean, if you ask them, I think somebody should ask the mayor of Chicago, would he set up a sanctuary city for shoplifters, sanctuary cities for car thieves? You know, and if somebody's they stole a car or they shoplift, just pay some kind of fine and be on their way. And we'll take care of them anyway.
Is it your experience, since you've lived through some terrible periods in our country's history in a way that I certainly haven't, is your experience that once you get beyond the politicians demagoguing identity politics, whether it's based on race or gender, that in terms of the actual interaction between human beings on a daily basis, things are actually pretty good, racial harmony wise, and not that you don't have some bad actors and racists, of course you do, you always will, but things are generally pretty good, much different than they were 50 years ago, and there should be some recognition of that, and people shouldn't be falling for the siren song of political demagogues who want to score points for themselves by fanning these flames.
I think you're absolutely right. My next birthday, which will be in March, I'll be 82 years old, and I have lived through and when I was in the Army, I was sent down to Georgia. I'd lived through a lot of the discrimination, but one of the things that we Americans do not appreciate is that the great progress that Black Americans have made. Now, for example, that if you just added up the income that Black Americans earn each year, and just thought of us as an independent country with our own GDP, black Americans would constitute the 16th or 17th richest country on the face of Earth. There are some black people who make a lot of money, millionaires. Many blacks are some of the world's most famous personality. And it was a black in the name of Colin Powell that headed the world's mightiest military. Now, the significance of all this is that in 1865, neither a slave nor a slave owner would have believed that this kind of progress would be possible in a mere 100 years or so. And as such, it speaks to the intestinal fortitude of a people, but just as importantly, it speaks to the greatness of a nation. That is, those kind of achievements that black Americans have made could not have been achieved anywhere else on the face of Earth. Now the problem that remains is how can we get 30 or 35% of black Americans for whom these gains have been elusive, how can we bring them into the mainstream American society? And that's the big question, and we won't get at it. We won't reach a solution by looking at racial discrimination.
He is Walter Williams, the great professor of economics at George Mason University, also nationally syndicated columnist. The website, again, for your musings, Professor Williams, is?
It's WalterEWilliams.com, WalterEWilliams.com.
Professor Williams, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
And thank you for inviting me. Bye.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Moscow in flames, missiles headed toward New York. Film at 11.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Life imitating Kentucky Fried Movie in Hawaii over the weekend. This false alarm about a ballistic missile attack. Do you buy the official response? I want to hear some creative conspiracy theories at 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
What is your theory? I mean, everybody in Hawaii got the most unbelievably heart-stopping text message of their lives saying that an inbound missile is on its way. It was 38 minutes of sheer chaos. Some people got out of their cars, Dan, and abandoned them on the roadways, on the highways.
Yeah.
One man took his family and hid them under a manhole cover.
Well, yeah, you had parents putting their children in storm drains, but that's where the killer clowns live.
Okay, stop it. I hate that movie.
You don't put the kids there. This is Governor Ige.
Ige? Well, I'm in the name assassinator. So I was going to say Ige, but it's Ige?
Yeah, you're just making fun of his name.
No, I'm not racist. I'm the most non-racist person you've ever interviewed.
I will get Senators Perdue and Cotton to corroborate my contention. Governor Ige on the false alarm.
Early this morning, an error was made and a false alarm was sent to cell phones and to TV and radio. We investigated, and as soon as we became aware that it was an error, we took action to send the notification that it was a false alarm. You know, this should not have happened. We are investigating the sequence of events that occurred. An error was made in emergency management, which allowed this false alarm to be sent. It was a procedure that occurs at the change of shift where they go through to make sure that the system is working and an employee pushed the wrong button.
He pushed the wrong button twice.
Well, yeah, because everyone thought, oh, it just happened once. But in order to activate that system for that alert to go out, it does have to be pressed twice. And Vern Miyagi is the emergency manager.
Mr. Miyagi did this?
Yeah, Mr.
Wax on, wax off.
Wax on, no, wax off. Wax off.
Oh, see? Oh, no, now you've done it. Oh, no.
Well, no, he did it, and he has
Al D'Amato impersonating Judge Ito.
He's not losing his job. He's just, you know, being reassigned and somebody else.
Of course he's not losing his job. He's a government employee in Hawaii.
Dear Lord.
It's my responsibility, so this would be my fault. The whole purpose of this is that the change of shift briefing is for each shift to understand what is the process. Now, we'll take action to prevent this from ever happening again by having more than one person they have to do this, make this decision, or work on equipment changes.
And then to prove that he still got the ability to do his job, he caught a fly with a pair of chopsticks.
Oh, stop it. I love how you called it a pocket dial.
Well, butt dial.
I mean, a butt dial.
Yeah, butt dial. Oh, yeah, but twice.
But,
see,
I
pressed the button twice. Also, 35 minutes to correct
minutes, yeah.
to correct the alert. So you know the alert is false because you inadvertently pressed the button twice. And then you call FEMA and you say, all right, well, hey, by the way, we told everybody ballistic missiles are heading for the islands and they're all going to die. If somebody could get back to us to give us the okay to issue a correction that's a false alarm, that'd be swell. And it takes more than a half an hour.
But here's the thing. It went out to all the television stations and radio stations. So this happened around 8 a.m.
Well, that's the whole point of civil defense,
saying,
to communicate an
know,
important message.
I know, but when the mistake, they realized it was a mistake. Do you know how easy it is to call a newsroom or the radio station and say, hey, no, this is an accident. Correct yourself. Because they're live on the air, the reporters, talking about this incoming ballistic missile. And people were scrambling. People didn't know what to do because there's only so much room in the bunkers. There's so much room in the storm
drains. Was this Albania? What bunkers in Hawaii?
Some people in Hawaii built bunkers in their backyard. The doomsday preppers. There's a family that went straight into the bunker, and other people
Jim
wanted to
Neighbors
come into the
has
bunker.
Passed on. He didn't, no, there's no bunkers there.
They said, no, there's no room at the end. But people, I mean, they don't know where to go, so maybe this is a good mistake. You know, this is a blessing in disguise, because now maybe they can make some more bunkers. Because where
the
people
hell are
supposed
you
to go?
Bunkers?
When you hear that incoming
missile.
What
the hell
missile,
are you talking about? I'll tell you, it's not bad enough we're polluting the landscape in Hawaii with windmills on the top of mountains and inert volcanoes. Let's throw some, mushroom-style bunkers like we're, a World War II communist-era country all around the... What are you talking about? Bunkers.
Where are you supposed to go when you hear that this is coming?
You're not supposed to go anywhere because there's a ballistic missile attack and there isn't going to be one. That's where you're supposed to go. That's the whole point. And the other point about this is so classic government and classic 21st century America. Hey, I'm not allowed to problem solve. I can't think for myself. I can't correct this. I gotta wait for Joe over at FEMA Division 3 to give me the okay to tell people, hey, that alert about... You being obliterated? That's not true. No.
People were calling loved ones, saying their last goodbyes, and in tears. I mean, if you see the video, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and another
and it's
testament
scary.
To government competence.
Yeah, you're right.
Sean in Elmwood Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I really like the bunker theory of selling bunkers. I think this is she may be onto something.
Yeah.
But listen, you asked for
drug.
Conspiracy theories. Here it is, Prof.
No
one is
from you. Yeah.
They don't like the Democrat Party doesn't like the level of concern of nuclear attack with North Korea. So the Democrat stronghold of Hawaii, after all, let's not forget what Hawaii is. It's a very corrupt Democrat hub. This is the one that produced the birth certificate and all that nonsense. Anyway, the conspiracy.
Okay. One conspiracy at a time.
The conspiracy is very, very simple. This is to put an accent on, listen, we are closer to nuclear war than ever, more so during the Soviet Union. Or, Prof, it's this. What exactly do you have to do to be fired from government? I mean, how bad does it have to be fired by government? And as far as civil defense, that's the part of the government where the rest of the government workers go, yeah, those guys are dumb. That's the special ed of government workers. It's civil defense. Do you ever take a look at some of these buffoons driving around in their old police cars? Let's cut them all. 95% of all government employees, you're fired today.
All right, Trump Jr., thanks for the call, Sean.
I honestly cannot believe that worker was not fired for this mistake. Hey. It was just reassigned. Vern.
What's with the zero? So you would impose a zero tolerance policy on issuing false ballistic missile attack warnings?
I would. And the governor, real quick, he said this is unfortunate.
It's unfortunate and regrettable.
Yeah, I got it.
We will be looking at how we can improve the procedures so it doesn't happen again.
It won't happen again.
They're putting two people instead of one on that shift.
Will in Evanston. Hey, Will, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to remind you of a certain fire commissioner in Chicago who turned on the air raid sirens when the Chicago White Sox won the 59 pennant.
Yeah, but that was for the Go-Go
Did
Sox.
Did we talk about that's firing a, Robert Quinn?
That's the Go-Go Sox. That's an exception to the alarm the public rule. Thanks for the call, Will.
Clear
that's a good
abuse
one.
Abuse of power back then.
That's
come
a good
on.
One.
Put on the air raid siren. Hey, the White Sox won the World Series.
Hey, come on. That's a little hat tip to Louis Aparicio, Nelly Fox and the boys. Jeff and Berwin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Greetings. This Hawaii fiasco is a great example of how all of these people that are wedded to their smartphones, like they're in their palm of their hand when they walk down the street, are so susceptible to disinformation. Okay? They have to be alerted to every little possible thing. And I'm telling you, there's so much disinformation and deep state manipulation going on that just get rid of your smartphone. You know, carry it in your back pocket, fine, if you need a phone call. But don't wet it into your hand like you're a zombie. And
yeah.
This Hawaii thing points it out. They are sheep.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it. Some texts. Was he waxing the wrong button, Mr. Miyagi?
Oh.
Yeah.
His name is Miyagi, Vern Miyagi. Common spelling.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
Why does that sound racist? It's
kind of an insult to the legacy of Pat Morita. Let's see. Text from 708. The false alarmer was transferred to the IRS. That's why it took so long to get approval. That's good. North Korea hacked the tech service. 708.
Oh.
847, someone needs to get him a Staples easy button to play with. What took them so long? Were they on hold with IT? You know, the conspiracy theories abound.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy. All right. So SNL did a cold open spoofing Morning Joe with Michael Wolff and Steve Bannon.
And Bill Murray was Steve Bannon. And that part wasn't that funny.
And Fred Armisen as Michael Wolff, who's
that was good.
Great. And the Catherine McKinnon, who plays Mika, and I don't know the dude's name, that plays Joe, they're hilarious. They're really good. This was on the alleged Trump comment about S-hole countries.
President Trump is at it again.
He's using
a deeply offensive word when describing Haiti and some African countries.
Can you just...
Join me to break this down as chair for the Center for African American Studies at Princeton, Eddie Glaude. Eddie, this is a blatant example of inflammatory racist language. Why don't GOP leaders condemn this immediately?
Well, first,
because Eddie, you've studied this stuff extensively, okay? I mean, can you imagine any other president making comments like this? What's your take? This is not the first time that he said something like this. Is this a surprise given his comments in the past? He's talking about Haitians. He's talking about Africans. And the question is this: when will they get to speak? When is it their turn? How long will they be silenced?
I personally...
Eddie Glaude, great points.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Fantastic. I don't watch that idiotic show, so I don't know if that's true about them just pontificating, even with a guest in their presence, but it was funny nonetheless.
It was good.
And then they flipped over to Armisen as Michael Wolff.
Oh, it's good.
this is good.
This book is wild.
Insane.
The conversations are so intimate.
It's depressing. I'm depressed. It's amazing what you found. You say the president watches TV most of the day. He eats McDonald's because he's afraid of being poisoned. Is there anything that you didn't include?
Well, sure. Probably the worst one is the baby races.
What?
Beg your pardon?
There were baby races. Trump would ask to have two babies placed in his office, usually of different ethnicities. Someone would put a bowl of goldfish crackers on the other side of the room, and Trump would say, $1,000 on the black one.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Sure. And on Michael Wolff's, the many errors in Michael Wolff's book.
Now, Michael, there's been several errors pointed out in this book already. Do you take responsibility for those?
Look, you read it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And you liked it. You had fun. Well, what's the problem? You got the gist, so shut up. You know, even the stuff that's not true, it's true.
That was fantastic. That was really good. And then, as you mentioned, Bill Murray comes on as Steve Bannon.
Did you blog that?
Yeah.
He's such a good blogger, Dan.
He reveals. What are you doing now, Steve?
And I'm also coming out with a new line of wrinkled barn jackets called Frumpers for Guys. Springtime skincare line. Blotch.
Blotch. Skincare line. But Bannon's going to be back, says Bill Murray as Bannon.
I convinced this country to elect Donald. And I can do it again. Already auditioning candidates, got some prospects. Logan Paul. Martin Shkreli. The subway guy, Jared Fogle. He's back. He's electable. It's time for America to slide down the Bannonster. Okay.
You know, Steve, I have to admit it. You did something amazing. You took the biggest long shot in history and you got him elected president. And you unleashed this monster of biblical proportions upon the universe.
Michael Wolff, it's the sweetest thing anyone ever said to me. Thank you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And so, I mean, just when you think the dossier Russian collusion story slash investigation can't get more bizarre, Moby.
Yeah, who is this? Moby. Moby.
Yeah.
One Kenobi.
Yeah, Moby. You don't know me. You're too old. It's over. Me. Nobody listens to techno. Moby saying CIA agents asked him to spread the word about Trump and Russia. Moby, this, you know, techno artist, said active and former CIA agents truly concerned about Trump's collusion with Russia enlisted Moby to spread the word because, according to him, they said to him, CIA agents, look, you have more of a social media following than any of us do, you know, because we're CIA agents, so we operate below the fold. Can you please post some of these things just in a way that sort of put it out there? It's really disturbing, and it's going to get a lot darker, said Moby. The depths of the Trump family and business, their involvement with organized crime, sponsored terrorism, Russian oligarchs, it's really dark. I guess we should all, like, fasten our seatbelts and hold on. Well, there you go. Once you've lost Moby, you've lost the nation. This story just gets more and more remarkable, including
like a soap opera script.
Last week, with the release of Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS, his testimony, which DiFi thought was exculpatory in some way, and nothing could be further from the truth. Excellent piece by Holman Jenkins in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. A former colleague of Glenn Simpson's, both at Insight Magazine and the Wall Street Journal, where Simpson basically says, look, Simpson took on faith that Christopher Steele, the former British spy that he hired to do the background investigation into Trump, was not being fed misinformation by the Russians, among other things that he took on faith. It seems to be this recurring narrative of we want to take this guy down, so we're going to suspend disbelief about whatever information we get that's negative. And also, there seems to be a suspension of disbelief about things like the 25th Amendment and the Goldwater Rule and a whole host of things in the left's pursuit to remove Trump from office. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Alan Dershowitz, of course, famed Harvard law professor, author of the new book, Trumped Up, How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy. Professor Dershowitz, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure. You know, with these reports about Moby and other things, my suggestion made on day one begins to look better and better every day. I had suggested no special counsel be appointed because special counsels operate behind closed doors, there's leaks, and I suggested the appointment of a nonpartisan commission like the 911 Commission looking into what efforts Russia has made to try to destabilize America and try to influence Americans on elections on both sides, not a partisan inquiry, not a let's get Trump or let's lock her up inquiry, but an inquiry to find out the truth, because all Americans should be concerned if Russia is trying to influence elections or if there are other inappropriate activities going on. And what we want is transparency and openness and a nonpartisan search for truth instead of both parties trying to take advantage of this against their political opponents.
So, Mr. Dershowitz, what have you learned so far about this Russian investigation?
Very, very little, because as I predicted, it's behind closed doors, and we've learned very little, and that's for one of two reasons. Number one, because there is nothing to learn. There has been no overt collusion. Second, of course, collusion is not a crime. So even if the prosecutor determines that there was some degree of collusion or cooperation, that's not his business. His business is not to reveal what happened. His business is to discover evidence of crime. And so I haven't learned very much, and I don't think the American public has learned very much. I think this has been largely a waste of resources and money and a diversion away from, you know, if you don't like what Trump's doing, vote against him, campaign against him, write op-eds against him, but stop with this lock him up, the 25th Amendment. He's diagnosed this way, diagnosed the other way. I would be saying the same thing, by the way, if Hillary had been elected and the Republicans were trying to lock her up and trying to diagnose her. We have to move away from this politics of criminalization and pathologization and psychiatrization and get back to, you know, if you don't like somebody, vote against them.
Yeah, I think psychiatize, that word that you've coined, I think that's the early leader in the clubhouse for Webster's Word of 2018, because we have seemed to move from criminalization, because they don't appear to have anything, nothing that they've leveled up for public scrutiny, from criminalization to psychiatization of political differences, as you said on Hannity last week.
And that's dangerous, because that's what the Russians did to dissidents. I represent some of them in the 1970s. That's what China tried to do with dissidents. That's what apartheid South Africa did. They tried to say that anybody who opposed apartheid must be mentally ill, and they had to be sent to moral rehabilitation centers. We just don't want to go down that road where we give psychiatrists like that professor at Yale the power to decide who's going to be president by imposing diagnoses on them. That's just so undemocratic.
Well, I do think some Democrats should get a grip. I mean, and stop saying that Trump should be impeached for saying the blank hole word when he was describing people from certain countries.
Well, impeachment, I'm writing an article about that now. I believe impeachment is reserved for high crimes and misdemeanors that are political in nature and that affect the national interest. And I don't think we should be also broadening the concept of what constitutes an impeachable offense beyond the words of the Constitution, which says bribery, treason, high crimes and misdemeanors. That's a debatable issue, and reasonable people could take both sides of that. But right now, there's no possibility of impeachment. So why are people wasting energy and resources on constitutional issues that won't come to fruition, impeachment and the 25th Amendment? It's not going to happen. Look, if there were to be a very, very different outcome in the 2018 midterm elections, who knows? We've seen impeachment misused. The impeachment of Bill Clinton, I think, was a misuse of impeachment. I think the impeachment of Andrew Johnson going back to the 1860s was a misuse. I think the only time impeachment was ever properly used in the United States was against Richard Nixon, and it never came to fruition because he resigned.
Yep. What about the lasting impact this may have with respect to law enforcement agencies that, of course, we want to have the confidence of that want, and we want to be confident in them? I'm talking about Department of Justice and FBI, with all of these conflicts of interest that have been unearthed with FBI agents and senior level leadership officials at the Department of Justice. Do you worry that those institutions are going to be irreparably harmed in terms of their standing in the American public's mind?
I don't think irreparably, but I think they're going to be harmed. I think that the people who have strong views, like the FBI agent, and who express them in messages and tweets, should have recused themselves. It should have been smart enough to say, look, I can't be unbiased here. I have very strong views. I want to see this guy out of office, and I can't separate out my law enforcement from my political views, so I'm going to recuse myself from the case. I don't believe that Mueller or Comey are partisan. I don't think they care whether they're helping the Democrats or Republicans. But some people think they're overzealous prosecutors. I've had experience with both of them, and they're very, very tough prosecutors. But I don't think they're partisan. I do think that Mueller made a serious mistake in how he staffed the investigation. When you're going after the president or people close to the president, you have to be above reproach, and you have to pick people who have no possibility of being perceived as being biased one way or another. And I think he did not pass that test.
Well, and with respect to Comey, you can maybe be post-partisan, but still very political, political for your own interests. And it seems to me that's the problem with Comey, from, you know, leaking information to a Columbia professor that he wanted to get onto the public arena, to the kind of bootstrapping an argument to absolve Hillary. The back and forth throughout the 2016 campaign didn't inspire much confidence in Comey from either side.
I agree with that. I think he was looking to preserve his own reputation, and he failed. And I think the idea of leaking material through a Columbia professor, A, is so amateurish, and B, so not what the head of the FBI should do. The FBI's job is to stop leaks, not to engage in them. And he projects a terrible role model to lower-level FBI agents when he himself leaks the information. If he wanted to get it out in the public, he should have had the courage to stand in front of TV cameras and say, I think there ought to be a special counsel appointed. Here's what I've seen. Here's what I have. And listen to me. But the idea of leaking it through a professor, and the idea that the professor would play that role. I mean, I was a professor for 50 years. I can't imagine getting a call from the former head of the FBI and accepting the role of leaker and essentially laundering material through a professor. It's just not the right thing to have done. I'm waiting to hear from the professor and waiting to hear his explanation of why he did it.
Oh, I know. And Comey, he just said it as if it was no big deal during that hearing. Like, well, I gave the information to a former professor. And so what's the future for Comey? What's he going to – do you think he'll have a second
show? Well, I think he will not be well remembered by history. And I think he had a very good reputation before this. Look, these are hard jobs. Ken Starr, who was a phenomenal guy, would have been on the Supreme Court of the United States had he not taken on the impeachment or – the special investigation of President Clinton. And, you know, he ended up not being on the Supreme Court, because when you take on this role, half of America immediately hates you, and you have to do it right. And it's a very, very hard role to perform, because it's partly political, legal, constitutional. And first of all, it shouldn't exist. I don't believe in special counsel, special prosecutors. I think they violate the spirit of the separation of powers and the role of the president as head of the executive branch. So there's an institutional problem in appointing special counsel. Most countries don't have to do it because they separate the prosecution function from the political function right from the beginning, but we don't do that. We have the Department of Justice, which performs both functions.
Well, Ken Starr got that Baylor president job as consolation, so at least he made more cash than he would have at the Supreme Court, so that's not bad.
Well, he'd been happier in the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
he was a good justice, I think.
A little bump in the resume.
Alan Dershowitz, famed Harvard Law professor and author of the book, Trumped Up, How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy. Professor Dershowitz, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
All right, this story is very disturbing.
Comes to us from New York.
I'm going to get them.
Yeah, TSA, one of the TSA officer found a cat packed inside checked luggage at Pennsylvania's Erie International Airport.
I'm going to get them. What's their name? Where
did the cat's name is Slim. Glad you asked.
Is it really? Is the cat still alive?
He just curled up in a pile of clothes inside the bag.
Oh, my gosh.
TSA posted on Instagram, while this could have been dangerous to the six-month-old cat, Slim is just fine and is currently residing under the care of the Humane Society of Northwestern Pennsylvania. He's certainly doing better than Kit Kat.
seriously, that's too soon. I mean, do you think it's been a week and a day since I had to put her down.
Do you think you have standing to comment on this case after you carried out a drug kingpin-style execution on your cat?
She wouldn't go down. I'm like, Michael Jackson her already, please.
Wow.
That's what she sounded like when they're putting her down.
Actual audio.
That was just awful. I think that's rude. I think it's way too soon to be joking around about my beloved Kit Kat.
Do you worry about like a pet cemetery thing happening
to you?
Okay,
will you stop it? That she's going to come and get me in the middle of the night and gouge my eyes out?
Just asking.
Do you know that has happened? If a person dies, a cat will begin eating them within 48 hours. That's disgusting.
Well, you know. Hey.
By the way, the couple.
Nobody's there to feed them.
What was their... They really thought they could check the kitten. Did they know it's 55 degrees, minus 55 degrees in a plane in cargo area?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you can transport pets in like cages.
Yeah, all they had to do was pay $100 and get a little like a duffel
carrying
bag
case.
Carry-on case and put it under the seat in front of them.
Oh, you can put it on the seat in front of you.
Oh yeah. Oh that's yeah. I've transported many cats.
Well, the seat, the bag. I mean,
it costs money, so you know.
Maybe it was accidental. Maybe he just got jumped into the suitcase when they weren't looking. That's why you always have to keep your bag in front of you. Don't let anyone else or any other animal touch your stuff.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.